I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, way too much time is being spent on the dumbest political debate in American history. Plus, Seattle's socialist mayor needs her hand held during press conferences, and striking workers will now have to prove that they're actually looking for work in order to get access to unemployment benefits. Gee, what a thought that is. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I need to start the show by ranting about something. I ranted about it last night when I got home off a flight from New York City, and I posted it on social media, and it's just a reflection of how I feel about a topic that's in the news right now. I'm just sick of talking about the girls' sports issue. I am so tired of it. And I have to imagine I was sitting there last night thinking, if I'm tired of talking about the boys and girls sports issue, then I imagine our audience is tired of hearing about it. I don't know about you, but my algorithm is absolutely overloaded with, you know, people, I mean, mostly on the radical left, just full of absolute nonsense. And I think my frustration is not that I'm going to, I mean, look, I have a show to do. This is a really important issue right now. There's an initiative on the ballot in November. I'm not saying I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not saying it's not an issue that I care deeply about, because I do. But when I say I'm sick of talking about it, it shouldn't even be a political debate that we have to have. It shouldn't even be a political debate we have to have. It's one of the stupidest political debates in the history of America ever of all time. And it gets stupider as every day moves on. We shouldn't have to sit here and have conversations about whether boys should be able to play against girls and men should be able to play against women. And so not only do we have to have a debate that we should never have to have in the first place, but it's become one of the biggest political debates in the country. And I would rather talk about a million other things. But until this is sorted out, until we agree that, yes, truth matters and common sense matters, and no, men don't have a right to, you know, have their penis in a women's locker room where you have to look at it, and girls shouldn't have opportunities taken away from them by boys, then I guess we have no choice but to discuss it. But it is like, I mean, it's one of the most soul-sucking topics we've ever had to cover at length on the show. And I'm curious to hear from you guys about it. I mean, we have the initiative in November to protect girls' sports. And we have to take this to its natural conclusion. And we have to just as society say, hey, we're not going to do this anymore. Common sense people are going to vote. And I think that if we can stop this in Washington state, it'll be a domino effect across the country. And we can all just move on with our lives, right? So we have to get to that point. But I'm also thinking on a broader scale, like, what has happened to our country? What has happened to our country that the media and big segments of the populace and the internet actually think this is a debate worthy of having? Like, the media treats this as if there are two totally legitimate sides of this conversation that they have to cover fairly. And there's not. One side of the conversation doesn't make any sense at all. There's a reason why 25 years ago there was Title IX and they separated men and women, and just because we're different biologically, and that's just not something that's open for debate. But then you have all these people for ideological reasons who treat it as a debate that we have to continue to have. And then regular normal people who I guess are scared of what people and their neighbors on the internet might think of them. And so they either step back from the debate entirely, or they act like, yeah, you know, well, trans people, I feel really bad for them. And so, yeah, we should just let them be naked in women's locker rooms, or, you know, smoke girls in athletics. And so it's just this crazy. I think it's very indicative of where we are as a country that we even have to be having this conversation anymore. I cannot wait personally for the day when I never have to discuss it again, because we've moved on past this issue, hopefully to something less stupid and crazy. And, you know, maybe it's because I've just been soaking in this. I was over the weekend, I was at Barclays Center in Brooklyn. I went with Jen Say of XXXY Athletics. There was a huge group of us outside Barclays Center to rally ahead of the Fever Liberty game. And also Annalie Wilson was there with me. She's obviously the track athlete from Washington State who's lost titles to biological boys in the past. And we had, first of all, We had a great time. This is one of the many stops on the tour that sort of started here in Seattle when we had the rally outside the game at the Storm facility, and Annalee Wilson was screamed at by Storm co-owner Celeste Keaton. And so I think me, Jen Say, and some others, we just wanted Annalee to have like a good experience at one of these games. And it was. She got her shoe signed by Caitlin Clark, which I think was pretty cool. It was like 2 minutes into the game, and Caitlin Clark came out, and she was doing signatures, and she got her shoe signed, and she didn't get screamed at by any adults in the stadium, that is. She got screamed at outside the stadium. More on that in a minute. But so we're out there. We had a rally at Barclays Center, and there was a pretty sizable anti-woman, pro-trans contingent that greeted us as we walked in. Here that is. And some of them were fine. I don't have an issue with people who want to hold up signs. And, you know, although I think their side of the debate is absolutely stupid, but, you know, the NYPD did a really good job at there was sort of a corral for us and there was a corral for them, and they kept us separated for the most part. But there was also some just unhinged stuff. Look at this sign. So this is a Fox News reporter who went over to try to interview some of the trans extremists. And this guy is holding a sign that says, "Fix your hearts or die." Fix your hearts or die. You know you're on the wrong side of the debate when you have to use a death threat as part of making your argument. Either you agree that men are women and boys are girls, or we will kill you. You know that that's the wrong side of the debate when they're using death threats. And I've said it, and I said it over the weekend. Look, conservatives in America are far more villainized and marginalized than trans people are in America. That is just the truth. And the trans movement right now is the most violent political movement in modern American history. I mean it. I mean every word of it. Can you think of another one right now? I mean, in Seattle, you've had trans extremists roaming a city park, beating people who they think are conservatives and threatening to kill them. You had trans extremists beat some conservative streamers with a baseball bat in Seattle. I mean, the vitriol and the hate and the death threats and the fix your hearts or die. It's the most, and the trans-loving extremist who murdered Charlie Kirk, it's the most violent political movement in America. They're not marginalized, not in the slightest. In fact, they get special treatment. They get extra special treatment. And people play pretend on their behalf. So I said the game itself was fine. You know, a few of us were sitting front row. Annalee Wilson wasn't screamed at, neither were the other girls, which I certainly appreciated, although there was a huge contingent of the WNBA fans who would boo Sophie Cunningham incessantly and all this stuff, which was just wild. And then we're walking home with a group of us, and we're walking back to our hotel, and it's at night, and we've got our XXXY shirts on, and I'm with Annalee Wilson, who again is 16 years old, and we're waiting on a corner by a stoplight to cross the street and for the rest of our group to catch up. And I hear this woman coming, yelling over and over, like, "F you, transphobes." And so I start my camera and I point it at her and I'm like, "What'd you say?" Here it is.
"F you, you transphobic assholes."
Yeah. And I'm standing next to a 16-year-old girl. "F you, you transphobic." And we didn't say anything to her before that, besides I just said, "What'd you say?" Because she's walking down the street yelling it. And she has a man with her. And I'm just like, can you imagine being married to that? Can you imagine for a second being married to that? These people are just filled with hatred. So I do want to, the first block of the show today, I want to get some stuff out of the way on the boys and girls sports issue and debate. And then I'm going to move on to other things today. Again, it's not like I'm not going to cover this issue anymore. I'm just annoyed that we have to. I become increasingly annoyed and exhausted that we even have to cover it. And then you just got the crazies that are coming out. And I almost think it's distracting from the whole debate. I want it to be about the girls. I want it to be about the women. I want it to be about girls' rights and women's rights and that sort of it. So after the day after the game in Brooklyn, the Fever went to Chicago and they played the Chicago Sky. And there was another rally there. And guess who showed up? Inez Freedom, the former NBA player who has made it clear that he intends to enter the 2027 WNBA draft. And he rallied with the girls outside. He had a shirt on that said, "Woman, noun, adult, human, female." And so I thought it was awesome that he showed up. And look, I've said I'm kind of two minds of the political stunt part of it, where you've got Inez and then Royce White is his name, I think, who's trying to also enter the WNBA draft. And I don't like how Royce has done it, because he's like putting the wig on and the lipstick. And I think Inez has a long history of being a human rights advocate. And so I think he really is doing this because he knows that by entering the fray like this, he is fighting for women and girls. And so you've probably seen the video, but he goes into the game. He's sitting front row under the hoop, and Natasha Cloud of the Chicago Sky, like out of nowhere, just confronts him and tries to go up to him on the sideline.
6-point basketball game. Chicago staying in it. Natasha Cloud. And right before the break, this was the scene inside Wintrust Arena after Natasha Cloud got that bucket. She wanted her voice heard. We have talked about the conversations surrounding the W. That is Enes Kanter in the building today.
So, you know, people are losing it at Enes Freedom. Oh, you know, I think the one thing he did wrong in that moment is, and he's a big guy, right? I mean, which just shows the absurdity of the situation. Look at his wingspan. I think he'd do very well in the WNBA, which is sort of the point. The only thing he did wrong is he took a step forward. I don't think he should have done that, because at the end of the day, that's a woman, right? And so she out of nowhere, he's sitting there for all intents and purposes. He's a fan. He's sitting there. He's got his, you know, definition of a woman t-shirt, advocating for women, while this unhinged activist on the court decides that she's going to go confront him. He didn't confront her. She confronted him. I don't think he should have taken a step forward. And she went unhinged, and he explained to Fox News what she said to him in that moment.
Sophie Cunningham shot a three, and I put my hands up to celebrate, right? Literally, a couple positions later, Natasha came back and start screaming and yelling and said, she's not gonna sleep with you. And I was like, I am not trying to sleep with her. I'm just here to protect women and support her, right? And then she started to yell. She started to use some very heavy language. She started to actually cuss. And I was very shocked that there were a lot of kids and there were a lot of teenagers was at that game. And I just cannot believe that she was just cussing and using those F-bombs in front of all these kids. And that is not, I mean, I'm sure like she's loved in Chicago and many kids and idolizing her and stuff, but that's not a WNBA athlete should react.
Yeah, and he got kicked out. He got kicked out when she's the one who should have been ejected. For going after a fan, cursing, oh, Sophie Cunningham's not going to sleep with you. Yeah, he took a step forward, but he didn't go on the court. He was still in his seating area. He kind of stepped past the photographers who sit on the floor there, right under the hoop. So just unreal that people are like blaming Inez for that moment when it was clearly Natasha Cloud who was like big into the BLM activism and all of that stuff. So again, it's just sort of become a spectacle. As it's become a spectacle, real women and girls continue to be hurt by this. It's not some manufactured, fictitious issue. I wouldn't be talking about it. I wouldn't be so passionate about it if it was a manufactured, fictitious issue. Girls are being hurt by this every single day. Girls are losing opportunities every single day. In fact, an update we have for you, we've talked and we broke the story on the show about Callie Keeler, the high school wrestler in Puyallup, Washington, who says she was sexually assaulted by an opponent who turned out to be a biological boy on the mat, didn't even know she was wrestling a boy. And then this boy aggressively, according to her, shoves his fingers in her private area for an extended period of time. Two school officials now face charges in that case for failing to report what she told them was a sexual assault. They waited 2 months to do it. We mentioned on the show last week that her attorneys had gone to a federal judge in Tacoma and asked for an emergency restraining order for Callie Keeler as the school year is set to begin, because she wants to play soccer, for instance, which is the sport for her that comes before wrestling in the winter. And her mom won't let her play unless they can be sure that she's not going to play against, you know, unbeknownst to her, against any biological boys. And so part of the lawsuit that Callie Keeler and her family have filed against, you know, the Puyallup School District, the state of Washington, the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association, part of this lawsuit moving forward is this demand for an emergency injunction that the school inform Callie's parents if she's going to compete against a biological boy, which I think is a very reasonable request. And based on the hearings that we heard on that case last week, I really thought the judge seemed to understand the concerns of the family, but apparently not, because they just denied that request for an emergency restraining order, basically saying, and I can understand this to a certain extent, but it says that the court finds no legal authority for the proposition that parents possess a substantive due process right to direct the administration of extracurricular student sports activities and the ability to obtain private, sensitive information about other students. And then it gets into some stuff about Title IX and interpretations of it. But what the judge basically found in that small part of it is, look, you know, the Callie's mom doesn't have a right to basically force the administration of their school and other schools to reveal whether other student athletes are biological boys. And so therefore, the judge is saying that we're not going to require that they do so. Now, the lawsuit will continue to move forward, but I think that means that Callie Keeler is just not going to be able to participate in athletics. So she's missing out on that opportunity because she doesn't want to be put in the position again to be on a wrestling mat with a boy in one of the most close contact sports that you can have. And so who's the victim in this? Callie Keeler. Girls like Callie Keeler. Her attorney with the Alliance Defending Freedom sent us a statement about this ruling saying, "We're disappointed in the court's decision to deny the motion for preliminary injunction. Our requests were simple. We asked the court to uphold Callie's Title IX right not to wrestle a male opponent in a girl's sport, and at the very least, to give her mom notice and an opportunity to opt her out without penalty. We also asked that Callie be transferred away from the officials who failed to promptly report her for sexual assault." So they wanted, like, Callie to be able to easily transfer to another school because she doesn't want to be around these people who didn't take her report seriously. The judge denied that as well. "The denial of these requests is bad news for all female students and their parents in Washington State. We will continue to stand up for their rights despite the court's preliminary ruling." And it is just that. It is a preliminary ruling. And I don't think any of us believe that necessarily this is a case that's going to have the correct conclusion in the lower courts, and it's probably something that's going to wind up before the Supreme Court of the United States. But in the meantime, I mean, Callie's going to go back to school. Girls like Callie are going to go back to school in a matter of days, and they are going to be forced with this reality that, yeah, we can look at it as this sort of laughingstock issue nationally and this spectacle and what happened with Inez over the weekend and what happened with us in Brooklyn, and we can all, you know, laugh at the unhinged people on the internet, but this is the reality for girls. And that's what I guess I'm frustrated and saddened by in all of this, right? Is like our, and my passion for covering this issue started with conversations and interviews on this show with real life teenage girls right here in our state who were doing their best, who were working as hard as they could, who were training and had reached the pinnacle of their chosen sport in high school athletics, and it still wasn't good enough. And so all of a sudden, this is 3 years ago now, before there was an initiative, before there was a national debate, you know, I met these girls and I just, like I've said before, I couldn't let it go. And so I've watched and we've watched this journey that these girls have been on to advocate for themselves and to stand up for themselves. And I think one of the things that makes me saddest about it is I don't think there's going to be a conclusion for them before it's too late for them. I mean, Annalee Wilson, I mean, gosh, we started this when Annalee was 15, the first time she spoke out about this issue. She's heading into her junior year. In fact, when we got back from New York City this weekend, you know, she starts track practice this morning for cross country, track and field. And it's like she's a junior and then she's going to be a senior and then before you know it, and she's trying to get recruited to college. And so these are real opportunities that are being taken from the girls. while the country loses its mind over it and gets engaged in these sort of silly tit for tats. And so I think that's my frustration, maybe more than anything. And the media, you know, not taking what's happening with these girls seriously and understanding, like, every day that goes by, that we don't, as a society, just be like, hey, this makes no sense, is another opportunity lost for these girls, or another potential sexual assault, allegedly, like what happened to Callie Keeler. And the media, and this is the last story I have on this today, I promise you, but there's just so much going on. You know, the media is complicit in it as well, in pretending like there's not only two sides to the issue, but pretending like our side, like we're bigots and we're doing something wrong, and totally artificially inflating the other side of this debate. For instance, the Tacoma News Tribune, they published over the weekend, this is just in their Sunday edition, two letters to the editor, both of them against the initiative to protect girls' sports in Washington State. They published three total letters to the editor. One was on a different topic, but two of them were from people opposing the initiative to protect girls' sports in Washington State. There was no letter to the editor that was in support of it. And both of them spewed the debunked lie that it will mean invasive genital exams for girls in Washington State if you keep boys out of female athletics, which just is not true. It's been debunked. Not only by us, by doctors, by documents that we've received talking about what a regular physical exam looks like. So the News Tribune not only doesn't fact check these, but it offers up two letters to the editor opposing the initiative. And then one of them leaves out some key details. So there, it was titled, "I'm a Doctor, You Shouldn't Back the Initiative to Sex Test Female Players." So this was written by someone named Dr. Madeline Gore. She says, "As a Tacoma-based family medicine doctor who treats both adults and kids, I'm outraged about a harmful initiative on November's ballot. New York Magazine recently wrote about Initiative 638, the most extreme measure of its kind in the country, which will require all girls and not boys who want to participate in school sports to submit to a medical sex verification." They say, "It'll require genital exams just to play sports with their friends and create unwarranted stress and harm for young girls," which again, none of that is true. You just have to do the regular physical exam that kids in our state are already required to do every other year. Your doctor knows whether you're a boy or a girl. And that's all they have to do on the physical exam is just check boy or girl. Now, this doctor who submitted this letter to the editor in the News Tribune, what did she leave out? Well, Dr. Madeline Gore, who works for MultiCare Tacoma, which has had a lot of issues with transgendering of children, she left out the fact that she specializes in LGBTQ plus care. She didn't mention that in there. She's a trans doctor. She does transing of kids and adults. That's what she does. Don't you think that's sort of a relevant detail for her using the pages of the Tacoma News Tribune to spread lies about an initiative? It says Madeline Gore, she/her, is a board-certified family medicine physician. Dr. Gore is committed to providing inclusive whole-person care across all stages of life. Her clinical expertise spans reproductive and sexual health, adult gender-affirming care, pediatrics, and then it says she's a family medicine LGBTQ plus care physician. And the Tacoma News Tribune doesn't care. They're like, yeah, radical doctor who clearly has an agenda. Let's just allow her and someone else to publish these letters to the editor. It's absolutely wild, which is why, and I think the natural conclusion to all of this is just to vote yes in November on, frankly, all the initiatives. To yes to repeal the unconstitutional income tax, yes to restore parental rights, and yes to keep boys out of girls' sports, and then hopefully we can move on. I would love for after November and the election, I would love to just never have to talk about it again, because it is just the stupidest issue that has sucked up so much time and energy. And in the meantime, the girls are the ones who suffer. And in all this craziness, I feel like we're just forgetting about them. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First, there is a lot happening in the housing market right now, a ton of listings on the market. And if you're thinking about selling your home, you might be concerned about what that means. Like, is it going to take a really long time to sell your home? Is it going to mean that you have to accept less money than you want for your house? Our friend Wes Jones says you can still get the results you want. You just might have to work with him to put a little more effort in.
I mean, there's like 10 different markets going on.
Sure.
It's by city. It's by price point. It's by location. And there are some markets that are performing surprisingly well. But there's far more that are being challenged with longer days on market, with price drops, et cetera. We are going more towards a balanced market. Mm. It still can happen. You can sell your home for a lot of money. You've just got to try harder than you used to.
Yeah. And by you try harder, he's going to try harder for you. And they have, I mean, they're equipped. Wes and his team, what they already offer their clients is made for a moment like this. I mean, they've got their Listing Boost concierge service coupled with their pre-inspection. So they come in and they do a pre-inspection on your home, which gets rid of sort of the uncertainty on the back end. But it also helps them figure out, okay, what kind of cosmetic updates or other upgrades do we need to make to the home to make sure you get the most possible value out of it? And it stands out in a crowded sea of listings. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, Seattle Socialist Mayor needs her hand held, quite literally. I mean, I don't mean physically needs her hand held, but it is clear that the people around Seattle's Socialist Mayor realize that she's in way over her head. And they are trying to keep her afloat. She's facing a potential recall. A judge is going to hear the merits of that coming up in just a couple days. So there were a few events that happened over the weekend. So one of the council members, Bob Kettle, he held a press conference with the media basically saying, look, Seattle's mayor has no public safety plan. We are just blind, wandering in the dark. She has no public safety plan. So he had that. And then the next day, Katie Wilson had a press conference on, I guess it's public safety related, on reducing traffic fatalities, which, look, is that important? Sure. Do we have other more pressing, urgent public safety crises in the city? Yeah, but this is like low-hanging fruit where she can say, hey, I'm doing something about public safety and have this press conference. But at this press conference, because it came right after the press conference where the council member was questioning whether she had a public safety plan at all, the media was gathered and they started asking her repeatedly about the accusations from Councilman Kettle. I want you to pay close attention. I'm going to go through some question answer from the press conference. Now, keep in mind, Katie Wilson already has a track record of running from the media, like sneaking out back doors so she doesn't have to answer questions, having her PR flackies refuse to allow the media to ask her questions that are off topic, which is just crazy. And a little of this happens here. So I want you to pay attention to the PR flackie that is like standing next to Katie Wilson while she's having a press conference.
Do you have a plan?
So public safety is an extremely high priority for my office. And I think the executive order that we're laying out today is definitely part of a comprehensive public safety plan. We also are working very hard on updating and improving, better coordinating our city's approach to gun violence. And I know we'll have more to share about that in the coming weeks.
Okay. Just making sure that we're talking about Vision Zero, right?
Okay.
I got about that.
So she interjects. I mean, watch this flacky.
Just making sure that we're talking about Vision Zero, right?
Okay.
I got about
that. That was, I think, the first or the second question from the media. And they ask about Bob Kettle. Hey, Bob Kettle says you don't have a public safety plan. And so the flackie comes in, who's our director of communications, and tries to tell the media, hey, we need to stick to why we're here, the Vision Zero for traffic fatalities. Ma'am, no, we don't. That's not your job. You don't get to tell the media. I know that you work for a socialist and socialists want state-run media, but, you know, we don't do that yet in Seattle in the United States of America. So you don't get to dictate what questions reporters come there and ask the mayor, try as you might. And this just continues. So right after that, after she's like, let's stick to the topic, right? So a reporter asks another question about Bob Kettle. Watch this PR flackie's face.
You know why council member Saka isn't here with us? Is it an OPM main thing or is it something else? And number two, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about public safety. And, you know, like people have... Council member Kettle has accused you of not having a plan for public safety. Would you like to respond to that and kind of talk more about the holistic view of public safety?
That's how mad she is.
Sure. And I mean, I think I respond to that a little bit with the earlier gentleman's question, but absolutely, public safety in all of its forms is extremely important. And traffic safety is one piece of that. Gun violence is a piece of that. Just the experience of walking outside in your neighborhood and what that feels like, or, you know, getting on the bus and riding transit, whether that feels safe, right? All of this is part of public safety. And, you know, to make improvements is a multidimensional effort, right? That involves lots of different partners. And we are working on that very hard every day, and welcome the collaboration of everyone here.
Yeah. So can we stick to the topic? Can we stick to the topic? And then they don't. And she just sits there. She's seething, like seething. How dare you? And to kind of set a runner here, I've covered six, I think now, Seattle mayors, and I used to be down at City Hall a lot. There have been some incompetent mayors, there have been some shady mayors and all of this stuff, but I've never seen a press conference at City Hall for a mayor dealt with like this, where you literally have the PR flackey right there. And again, watch. So, and then it gets to the point where Katie seems to be floundering. And so the PR flackey is telling her, literally telling her what to say.
Okay, right there.
Watch.
So again, I don't want to speak for Councilmember Sacca.
Hold, can you play that again, Nicole?
Okay, right there.
So again, I don't want to speak for Councilmember Sacca.
So she fed her the line. So somebody asks, "Where's Councilman Sacca?" Because Rob Sacca isn't there, and she's like, and he's like, cares about this issue about reducing traffic fatalities, and so they found it. The reporters found it weird that the other councilman who cares about this issue wasn't there as well. So where is he? And the PR flackey says to her, "Oh, we don't speak. We can't speak for Rob Sacca." And she says, "I can't speak for Rob Sacca." So now they're feeding her lines. And then here's this last clip I want to play.
Okay.
I had a question about community engagement, which, you know, obviously in San Diego, we love that type of stuff, but it has been used as a bludgeon for projects in the past. I think, you know, even the Vote Beacon Hill project down to part down the road that had three parking studies before we could move forward with it. Does your executive orders or the associate effort have anything to say about that, and how can we make that process
come help her.
So slow?
Yeah.
You guys.
Angie can come up. I know. Yes. So yes, it does address this.
I've never seen anything like it. They are all but holding her hand. And it's really not a surprise, right? I mean, she's not equipped for the job. We all know that. Most of the city council knows that. Most of the city council has said that publicly. She's facing a recall. She hasn't had a real job before in her life. So yeah, I mean, I understand, like, she really is in over her head. But if you're trying to project, which I hope her staff would do, if I was the staff for a mayor that was struggling in the court of public opinion and was struggling to project competence, the very last thing I would do is stand right next to her at a press conference and tell her what to say and try to stop the media from asking hard questions, because that doesn't project confidence. It doesn't project competence. It's really sad to watch. And I almost think that this PR person wants her to look bad, because it does make her look bad. And if you're a professional PR person, you should know that the best thing you can do is to properly brief her. Brief her for the variety of hard questions and off-topic questions that she might face during a press conference as the mayor of a major city, and make sure she is prepared enough to go out there on her own without you standing right next to her and holding her hand through a press conference. It's sad, but it's also pretty scary. She's not even 9 months into the job, and this is where things are at. All right, coming up next, a good development on a bad law that allows striking workers to get unemployment benefits in Washington state. A little rare glimpse of sanity. First, there has been a rash of fake contractor scams across multiple states, but including Washington state. The Department of Homeland Security is now investigating. A lot of them involve a guy with the Irish accent coming up to homeowners, knocking on the door and offering to kind of fix their roofs, for a very small amount of money, and then they tear it apart and ask for a lot more money. And apparently Washington homeowners have lost like $1 million in this scam already. Well, the feds investigate. But you guys shouldn't fall for it, because one, you're pretty smart. And two, We have Valentine Roofing as a show sponsor, so you shouldn't be dealing with shady contractors out in the wild promising you to fix your whole roof for $1,500. So when you work with Valentine, every customer can expect the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup. And when you see that red van at your home or your neighbor's home, you know that they're in good hands. Valentine Roofing right now is offering priority scheduling for your roof replacement. That means that when you call Valentine Roofing today, they can get your job started within 3 weeks of signing the agreement. So you can sort of beat the fall rush, so to speak. And they make the process really simple. Get an estimate, transparent pricing options, and also flexible financing options. So call 206-ROOFING to schedule your free estimate. That's 206-ROOFING. And remember, when you see the red vans, you know you're in good hands. Make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, a little bit of sanity. I like this update. So one of the weirdest bills, I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, it's a gift to the unions, basically, that was passed in Washington state, is a law that allows striking workers, people who choose to go on strike, to access the state's unemployment benefits. Well, now the requirements to access those unemployment benefits just got a little more difficult. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So we said at the beginning, this was a gift to the unions, and the unions really control Washington state Democrats, who control, you know, the House, the Senate, the governor's office, et cetera, basically every function of state government. This is Governor Bob Ferguson signing the bill that gives unemployment benefits to striking workers.
Allowing striking workers to access unemployment insurance benefits creates a more level playing field for workers to have the resources they need to effectively bargain for better working conditions.
Which, no, it doesn't allow them to have the resources they need. It basically takes out any sort of, you know, necessity to come to the bargaining table in good faith. And so when you're getting paid, that's one of the main things, right, that ends a strike is, hey, we got to come to the table because it's hurting the business quite a bit. So they have a motivation to come to the table. And then for the workers, they're not getting paid, or maybe their strike fund is running low. So they come to the table, and then in good faith, they work to bring the strike to an end. And so we knew as soon as they passed this that what would happen? There'd be a ton of strikes because you took away one of the biggest risks of striking. And there have been so many right now. Seattle teachers are getting prepared to strike if they don't reach a contract agreement. There have been hotel worker strikes. Of course, the Starbucks striking workers went on for quite a long time. It might even still be going on, honestly. I feel like they just decided they're going to strike at a different store every month. Boeing, I mean, across the board. So it set up this environment that was very clearly going to lead to a lot of strikes. And one of the things we discussed at the time was that the standard for the striking workers to access the unemployment system was actually much lower than it was for anyone else who wants to access the unemployment system. Because for you or I, you know, if you get laid off from your job through no fault of your own and you want to get unemployment benefits, what do you have to do? Well, you have to go out there and show that I'm looking for a job. You're not allowed to just sit at home and drink beer and collect a check. There are requirements to show that you are out there actively seeking employment, which makes sense. But when they passed this law for striking workers, they said, oh, well, you know, you're just striking. You're going to go back to work, so you don't have to show that you're actively out there seeking another job, seeking employment. So it's just this crazy, again, you can't look at it as anything other than a gift to the union, and taking away these requirements to access those funds that other workers who actually lost their job through no fault of their own, the hoops they have to jump through in order to access unemployment benefits. But now, that is ending. And this apparently has been happening behind the scenes for about 8 months. So back on January 8th of this year, the U.S. Department of Labor wrote the state of Washington a letter saying, you can't do that. You can't give unemployment benefits to people who aren't showing that they're looking for employment. The letter said, dear state administrators and unemployment insurance directors, to preserve the integrity of the nation's unemployment insurance system, I'm writing to clarify the requirements of federal UI law with respect to the UI eligibility of individuals during a strike. Federal law establishes requirements for state unemployment programs, including broad coverage provisions, benefit provisions, experience rating requirements, and certain administrative requirements. A state's failure to follow these requirements may lead to conformity or compliance issues. A state's law must conform to the requirements of federal unemployment law in order for the state to receive grants to administer their unemployment programs. So it says, it attached a series of questions and answers, and one of the things they honed in on is, in order for us, the federal government, to find this law proper and to assist your state in carrying out its unemployment benefits, you have to require that the striking workers are looking for a job, just like you do for everyone else. So they told the state that way back in January, and now the state has adopted an emergency rule, and the state realizes its hands are tied on this, and it has to implement this rule. So they put out an emergency rule, work search for claimants on strike. So it put this out saying the purpose of this rulemaking is to clarify that work search activities are required for claimants who are receiving unemployment insurance benefits due to a strike in accordance with the United States Department of Labor's interpretation of federal code, essentially. So it says the Department of Labor has warned the Employment Security Department that its current work search rule is out of conformity with federal law and must immediately be remedied, or the department may lose federal funding for administration of the unemployment insurance program. So starting now, if you're going to go on strike, and this really does, I mean, I still don't think the law should exist, but this is a pretty substantial change. You can still get unemployment if you go on strike, which I think is really stupid. But not only are you going to have to find your time to be on the picket line, but you're also going to have to find the time to prove that you're out there actively looking for work. And of course, it's work that you're never going to take because you already have a job, you're on strike. And so I like it because it's basically putting them through a bunch of hoops for nothing because they're not going to take those jobs that they're applying for, which is sort of annoying because it's wasting the employer's time. Like, they're going to be out there seeking work and they're going to like waste the time of people who actually need to fill the job and they're not going to take the job. So I think it's sort of silly. And so the Employment Security Department put out some information on how to track job search activities. It says each week you submit a claim, you need to complete 3 job search activities. So you have to keep a written log of your job search activities, and you have to submit that every single week that you want to put in for unemployment benefits. Now, to the extent that they're going to be able to fake that, or I don't know, I guess we'll have to see how that works. But it is an extra step in order to get that funding. This is from the Employment Security Department. They put out a statement because there were a couple questions we had. Why did it take you so long? I mean, the feds told you 8 months ago that this wasn't going to fly. So why did it take so long for you now to implement that rule? And what does it mean? Because you've already paid out, I think it's like $500,000 or something in unemployment benefits, because there's already been a lot of strikes between then and now. So what happens for all the people who were on strike and got unemployment benefits without having to prove that they were looking for work? So here's what ESD told us. We've been in conversations with the U.S. Department of Labor since before and after the state law took effect and how that applies to the state striking workers law. Our interpretation was that workers are attached to their employers while on strike. This week, the Department of Labor told us the employer attached waiver does not apply in the case of a strike because the employer did not initiate the separation. Starting this claims week, work search requirements for workers who are on strike will be required. This requirement will apply to all new claims during a strike. This will not impact previous claims. So essentially, they're not going to have to pay the money back. So if they already paid out benefits to striking workers who went on strike in the first 8 months of the year, well, congrats. They just got the money without having to do anything for the funds. But now moving forward, that'll be different. And I do have to wonder if that is going to impact at all, whether there's going to be teachers' strikes leading into the new school year, or if they'll just find a way to make it work. But I think that's a pretty positive development. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. A quick story I want to get to just because, you know, Washington State is having a pretty hard time right now keeping businesses here. We've been talking about all the layoffs across a variety of sectors, not just tech. And look, you can blame some of the tech layoffs on AI, totally get that. But there's been layoffs across a variety of sectors. Not to mention, you never know how many businesses are just not going to come here, how many entrepreneurs are not going to come here because of our tax environment and the vilification of people who contribute to society. But another sector in Washington state that's been struggling quite a bit, we've done a lot of coverage on this, is farming and agriculture. We are dead last in the nation for farm profitability. Our state is losing family farms at a record clip. And now they're about to lose a pretty big factory. So Tyson Foods is announcing a big restructuring for its beef business. And they say part of it is that they are now pursuing the sale of their massive beef facility in Pasco, Washington. So if they're going to pursue the sale of that and close it down as their beef facility, we already know that that's going to come with a lot of jobs that are going to be lost in Washington state. And when they put this out, they said, and they were honest about, and the farming industry has been honest about, who's to blame for it. You know, yes, Tyson is a national company and it has national interests when it looks at restructuring. But in Washington state, they've made it very, very difficult for people in the ag industry to be able to be profitable. You know, some of the things that they've put down around employment law has added restrictions onto small farmers, big farmers, and ag businesses that are almost impossible, you know, in terms of pay and overtime rules, et cetera. So this is from Save Family Farming that put out a statement about this, saying state leaders need to take this situation seriously and focus on bringing immediate changes that keep our legacy of farming and ranching going. If even the few bright spots in our deeply struggling farming community can no longer survive here, the viability of farming in Washington state is dead. They said even while beef is in high demand nationally, ranchers and cattle feeders here in Washington face difficult decisions with the future of this critical piece of food and farming infrastructure in question. Washington state leaders had a big hand in making this one of the most expensive places in the nation to grow food. And it is. And if you become an expensive place to grow food, to package food, they're just going to move it somewhere else. There are a ton of other options for them, and it's not going to be Washington state. All right. Former Washington state U.S. Senate candidate from Washington, Tiffany Smiley, is having not a very good day on X. And it has to do with comments she made about the Lindsey Clancy case, the woman who murdered her three children and is on trial. We'll get to that. First, a lot of investors right now focused on AI, crypto, tech, and of course, what's happening with energy in the Middle East. That's a big part of it. Energy impacts all facets of our economy. So if you're worried about your retirement portfolio and what's going on right now, just get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. And he'll go over how they're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get that second opinion? Saving for retirement is just this huge part, ever-present part of our lives. And you want to make sure that you have a plan to properly mitigate risk. Risk is always part of the equation. But again, you don't want to expose your hard-earned retirement to unnecessary risk. You want to make sure that you can have the retirement that you're planning for, that you're dreaming of. So I think getting a second opinion on something that big just makes sense. Zach's my money manager. He's my mother's money manager. And we just love working with him. So schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast YouTube channel and on all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk podcast. All right, we haven't talked about the Lindsey Clancy trial on the show, and I guess that's because everyone's talking about the Lindsey Clancy trial on their shows, and I just don't know that I can add anything to it because I'm not, first of all, just to be frank, I'm not a mother, right? And so a lot of what's happening in the Lindsey Clancy trial has to do around, you know, postpartum depression, for instance. So she killed her three kids, but she also had a ton of like psychotic issues with postpartum. I was on a whole bunch of different medications. And so the question is like, is she guilty of murder or is she not guilty by reason of mental insanity? And it has gotten a lot of women across the country really fired up and like showing up dressed in pink outside the trial, you know, like weeping tears for Lindsey Clancy while not really saying anything about her murdered children as much, which seems a little insensitive, certainly. Tiffany Smiley, who's now kind of become a pundit on some of the network news channels, but she ran for United States Senate in Washington state, and she's also a mother of three. She posted this on X. My heart breaks for Lindsey Clancy. I hate that it took a tragedy like this to talk about women's mental health and postpartum depression. Too often it is swept under the rug. Our healthcare system has failed women. Many women are given the baby, told good luck, and thrown out on the street. These are real issues that impact tons of new moms, and it can lead to psychosis that gets worse with each child. The only way it changes is by addressing a healthcare system that is overwhelmed and inaccessible. Now, as I'm sure you can imagine, that first sentence, my heart breaks for Lindsay Clancy, which was not followed up by my heart also breaks for her three dead children, has not gone over very well on the X. Not very well at all. She is getting ratioed to high heaven. But first, let's actually listen to what Tiffany Smiley said in her interview on Fox News.
So when I first started, you know, paying attention and looking into this case, it actually broke my heart for everyone involved in this. And I hate that it takes something like this to have a real conversation about women's mental health and postpartum depression, because it is a real thing.
Yeah. So she says in there, like, it broke my heart for everyone involved. And so a little more context in the actual words she spoke on Fox News. But like, look, the post was bad. It absolutely was bad. I mean, it has 7,200 replies and only 500 likes. So when you talk about ratios, I guess that's kind of as bad as it gets. Here is a sampling of some of the responses. Spencer Pratt said, I think most normal people's hearts break for the three defenseless toddlers she strangled to death and the father who found them face down in the basement. I could be wrong, though. Jasmine Keith, my heart breaks for those babies that watch their own mothers squeeze the life from their tiny bodies, because those are the real victims, along with the husband that had his world shattered. Lindsay took that from all of them. Let's see. Will Chamberlain, my heart breaks for her children and their father. Lauren Chen, not a single mention of the three children who Lindsay strangled. So a lot of responses like that. And I actually think it would be good to have Tiffany Smiley on the show. We'll ask Tiffany to come on. And again, like, I'm not a mom, so I've never given birth. I've never been through postpartum anything. And with what I know about the case, I mean, I don't disagree that she clearly was in a very bad mental state. And it's my opinion that there was enough there that someone should have intervened and made sure that she was nowhere near those children in a position to hurt them. And so is by law, is she not guilty by reason of insanity? What does that mean? I haven't sat through every single day of the trial. I can't say for sure, but I know that if I'm expressing sympathy, it's probably first and foremost going to be for the innocent toddlers whose lives were choked out of them. And so I think that's sort of where the misstep is coming. You have so many of these women who are expressing all this sympathy for Lindsay Clancy when she still did something absolutely horrific and inexcusable. And so I think some of that sympathy comes off very strange indeed. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, based on what you know about the case, I asked you, do you believe that Lindsay Clancy is guilty of murder? Or should she be found not guilty by reason of mental insanity? Nicole, what do you think?
It's a tough one, but I mean, it's guilty. I still believe, I know that you're kind of crazy in that moment, but you still kind of, I don't know, but I think you still kind of know what murder is.
Right. Here's why I think guilty, because of what seemed like a lot of premeditation. Like, she sent her husband away from the home to run errands. And I mean, in that moment, there was so much time that passed where she clearly had made a plan to do this, to execute on the plan, to kill three children in sequence in the basement. And so that's my opinion, that she is absolutely guilty of murder. But I do agree. I think that two things can be true at once. I think that the healthcare system absolutely not just let her down. The healthcare system let the kids down. It let the family down. You know, all the medication she was on, the pharmaceuticals and all these things. So there's a whole bunch to this case that's definitely a relevant part of the conversation. But to act as if, like, you know, what did Tiffany Smiley say in this? She said, our healthcare system has failed women. Many women are given the baby, told good luck, and thrown out onto the street. I mean, you know, you did choose in most of these cases to have a child and had kind of 9 months to prepare for it. So I guess I just don't agree with the assertion that, like, it's someone else's responsibility to, I don't know, get you properly prepared to be a mother. But yeah, I mean, when you're on that many drugs and having all these issues and saying some of the things that she was saying, I feel like somewhere someone along the line should have said, hey, maybe it's not a good idea for her to be alone with these children right now. 90% of you say guilty. Fika says, I'm so sick and tired of the reason of insanity defense. You committed the crime, now do the damn time. And I tend to agree with that too. Like, even if you committed a crime because you were insane, well, that means that you're still really dangerous and you're capable of committing such a horrific crime. So you should still do the time. I mean, I don't see any difference. 12th Man says, what a sad story. Insane or not, should never be released back into society. I agree with that. Jeffrey says, this is like being found not guilty of vehicular manslaughter by reason of intoxication. Let's do a couple more. James, Brandy, occasionally you remind me that I may live under a rock. I have not heard of this. Oh, wow. That actually does surprise me because this has been just all over the place. Absolutely crazy. Bully Mom, she is guilty whether she had psychosis or not. Doesn't make her less guilty. She admitted to killing them. She probably needs mental health treatment, but postpartum psychosis does pass. She does need to pay for the crime. And also, like, I'm sorry, but, and again, I don't want to speak out of turn having not gone through postpartum anything. I feel like this is a very extreme example of postpartum psychosis. You know, you hear women on the internet saying, like, look, it's really tough. And I don't doubt that or deny that at all. But I think this is obviously a very exceptional case of it for this woman. And so I'm not sure that it's something that, like, every woman can relate to what Lindsay Clancy went through and what she did. And that's kind of what it feels like, is women are saying, they're posting these videos, they're holding their children. And it's in the background is her attorney is reading some of what Lindsay Clancy said before, like in texts and stuff and in letters before she murdered her kids. And it's this weird trend where the moms are holding their children and it says on the screen, same Lindsay. And I'm like, somebody send CPS to that person's house. Same? What do you mean same? Are you thinking of doing the same thing? And as a husband, can you imagine as a husband seeing your wife holding your child, posting a video like that on social media? I'm sorry, as a husband, I'd probably take my child and flee the country. So it's really brought out some weird sort of women who are suggesting that this is in some way normal, because it is not normal. I think postpartum depression is normal. And from what I'm hearing, you know, these stages of sort of grief and anger and all this stuff, but this is not normal. Let's just stop. All right, really quick, I want to note, we're kind of waiting for this whole drama with the post office and mail-in ballots. So President Trump, of course, wanted to put all these restrictions on states that have mail-in balloting for the post office's participation in those, because the federal government controls the post office, right? And so basically, the president is trying to use the post office as a tool to force states to be more responsible about, you know, voter ID, about tightening up their vote by mail system, et cetera. So this is the latest headline in that. USPS has made new rules for mail-in balloting, but they're less restrictive than the initial demands that President Trump had, and they can't go into effect unless the U.S. Supreme Court lifts an existing injunction. So it says the United States Postal Service has released a new rule adding verification requirements to all mail-in ballots, falling short of President Donald Trump's expectations, but providing additional scrutiny. The changes wouldn't go into effect unless the Supreme Court lifts an injunction. If given the go-ahead, the Postal Service said the changes would occur immediately. And people have been skeptical of that, because if you're going to implement changes, and I've even been skeptical of it because we're 2 months from an election. And so my question is, of course, as iffy as I am about mail-in balloting and some of the chain of custody issues in Washington state not requiring voter ID, I also don't believe just throwing our election system into a free fall 2 months before the election is a particularly good idea. It says under the proposed change, states would be required to collect and report basic voter information, such as a voter's name and home address, attached to a unique barcode on every mail-in ballot distributed. Currently, there's no such standardized requirement or method for states to track this information, instead letting each state independently decide how its mail-in voting system operates. State election authorities would then be required to input the information into a federal ballot mail portal before the ballot is accepted into the mail stream. The USPS said it would not deliver ballots to any state that is not in compliance with those changes. So certainly it would impact Washington state. So now the only remaining question is, when is the injunction lifted? Is it before the election? Is it after the election? And then are there any sort of legal challenges that remain out there into the ether? So just an update on that. All right, let's get to some comments from the live stream, shall we? All right, on our trip to New York City, Robert Parr says, I am glad you're talking about it. We all seem to be confronted by people who choose the easy wrong over the hard right. Yeah, it's just like this. I don't know how to put it because I'm not. Are you with us, Nicole?
Yep.
Earth to Nicole.
No, I'm reading.
I'm not saying I'm sick of talking about it. Like, I don't want to talk about it. I just think it's stupid. We have to talk about it. Right. I think it's stupid. It takes up oxygen at all because it really is that dumb of a conversation.
Although, I mean, part of me is okay with it ramping up to this level because it's getting close. It's getting close to November. Yeah. It's getting close to these things need to be decided. And if they were, I feel like we kept stringing them along. I kept getting, like you said, Annalie now is, you know, getting ready to go into a senior year, like, or junior year. Mm-hmm. But these things are just taking too long. Yeah. I feel like it needs to come to a head soon. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And I definitely worry about, I don't want people to get turned off on the debate because there are sort of, there are people. Like, I don't like, there was this example at a WNBA game where these guys showed up as fans in wigs and lipstick all over the place. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's helpful.
No.
I don't think stuff like that is helpful because as stupid as I think the trans movement has become, making fun of people really for any reason, I don't believe it leads to addition toward the movement. Mm-hmm. So I'm really only interested in things that lead to addition, have more people taking our side, voting to protect girls' sports. So my concern is there's going to be so much of that rage bait stuff mm-hmm. that people will be like, you know, screw you guys too. You're both crazy. That's sort of what I'm concerned about.
I mean, to me, it's pointing out how ridiculous the other side is right now. So I don't see our side
being
ridiculous.
Right, but does that add
a couple people?
People like, to the movement, though.
Yeah, but it's more people being ridiculous on the other side and a couple trying to make a point. And it's quite clear that they're trying to make a point. They're like, this is where you brought us.
Yeah, I know.
I agree that it's not helpful. And
Yeah, but I just want to focus on the girls, the real stories. Like, I don't need to focus on stories of fake girls.
But maybe nothing else has worked.
Too. I know.
I don't know.
All right, Matthew Cook, you want to get that one?
Yeah, when people stop fighting for objective truth, the propagandist when there's reason the Bolsheviks took over Russians, even though they were a small, unpopular minority.
Yeah, a lot of what happened with the Bolsheviks and the Red Wave, it's so similar to what's happening mm-hmm. today. I mean, it really is. We're on a road towards authoritarianism, and part of it is getting rid of, like you said, objective truths. Like, oh, that truth isn't true anymore. And you brainwash people and you make it so dangerous for them to disagree that all of a sudden they just fall into line. Mm-hmm. Jennifer says, hey, Brandy, I met you at Freedom Fest. We took a selfie together. I would love to share my story about my son being bullied into being trans with you if you're interested. Love the show. Yeah, I think that we directed you. Yeah, go through the website. Yep. Email us. If you have already, maybe do it again. Just it got lost or something and we'll talk about it. All right, go ahead.
Let's see. So Steph says the biggest misconception because we don't want biological men playing biological women's sports. We hate them for being who they are.
Yeah, I don't. And let me be clear. I think there are trans people out there who have been living the way they want to live for a very long time and not bothering anyone. And you should be on our side of this then. You should be on our side of this because this is going to lead to, I think, an erosion of your acceptance in society when you haven't done anything wrong. I have no issue at all with people mm-hmm. spending our limited time on this planet, living the life that they want to live as long as it doesn't interfere with the life someone else wants to live. And so when you're going to, you know, force your way into a woman's locker room or a bathroom and make other people uncomfortable, that's where I have an issue. So, yeah, I do think it has hurt trans people who, you know, I had a neighbor once who was transgender. And they just like came and went. Like, it was very clear they were a man who chose to dress like a woman. No big deal. Were perfectly nice. Could not have been nicer. Is somebody who I think was a great neighbor, would have like knocked down my door if my house was on fire. And like, I never thought anything of it because they didn't like demand that I call them a certain mm-hmm. thing. It's just like they're, and so that I feel bad for them as well. On Inez Kanter being kicked out of the WNBA game, De Pluribus Unum says Dems define a woman as a person too dumb to get photo ID. Yeah. The Democrats do say that women won't be able to vote if you get photo ID. So they don't think too highly of women, apparently.
I really wish people examined these things that they say, that they spew out in in these arguments.
Yeah. But,
because they just get floated right over.
I know.
Especially by the media, I guess.
Yep.
Pressure mounts on the Seattle socialist mayor. Poison Blade says questions subject to Karen approval.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, it's funny. I think that is our new person.
Yeah, that's the new communications director. And hey, she called on me at a press conference. That's fine. And I don't mind when they have it be a little more orderly and say, okay, you next, then we'll go here. I don't mind that at all, as long as they're not picking favorites, because it beats shouting over each other, honestly. But you can't say, we have to stick to the topic. Like, no, we don't.
That's not a thing.
No. Eric, the media should probably ask, Katie, are you okay? Can you blink 3 times if you need help? Yeah. Katie, are you being made to do this against your will? Because it seems like it sometimes. All right.
Sure
on does. Striking workers having to apply for jobs to get paid.
So Edmund says if they are offered a legitimate job and turn it down, they lose the unemployment benefits by unemployment law. So what then they say? What then they say on a strike?
They stay
without
on strike. That's benefits. A good question. I didn't know that if you get a job offer and turn it down, you lose benefits. So we need to follow up and ask.
Oh, no, that's
ask. Oh, you already know. Okay.
That's on the sheet that we had on the screen.
Okay.
Yeah, it says
if
you turn down a job, they can revoke your benefits.
Oh, hold on a second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's near the bottom. Could be near the bottom. Anyway.
Okay.
It is a requirement of, I know that from being unemployed in the past. If you turn down a job or even if, I think that they could even say if you turn down interviews, like if you get called, things like that, then they can investigate and determine if it was a legitimate reason. So,
if that's the case, then that kind of renders this law a little bit useless for the striking workers for the purposes they wanted it for. Because they're not going to take the job that's offered to them. So they immediately lose their unemployment benefits.
The only thing for teachers is that there's a bit of a there's not a lot of openings for teachers. There's not a lot of hirings and it's very competitive right now. So maybe if you just don't answer an email or something like that, then maybe
you could apply for jobs you're totally unqualified for that you know nobody is going to offer you. And so I think there's ways around it. All right. On the beef plant for sale, Metal Panzer Wolf says, I just bought a quarter of a cow at a local farm on Saturday, $1,500. I remember when it was below $800. Yeah, we buy an eighth of a cow every year. And an eighth of a cow is for just Mike and I. It's a ton of meat.
It's a lot of meat.
Yeah, really is.
You know what? I am seeing some posts from some farmers lately that are really sad and really frustrated with the Trump administration as well, because they were very supportive in bringing things back. And then he had all that stuff this weekend about
Argentinian
buying beef from other countries.
I know. I'm like, why are you doing that? That does not make any sense. That's one of those weird things. I'm like, why is Trump like talking about how we need to buy beef from Argentina?
Well,
it's so strange.
He said something about because they're in need of selling it or something. I'm like,
Trump,
what about America first?
America first.
So
that makes no sense.
Look into that.
Yeah.
Keep an eye.
All right, Nicole, thank you very much. Yeah. If you're looking to save some money, times are tight right now, reach out to our friends at Firstmark Insurance. There's a good chance. I mean, for a long time, you know, you'll choose an insurance company, you'll just set it and forget it, assume that they're doing the best they can for you, getting you the best price, and that might not always be the case. Firstmark is here to double check for you. So Firstmark Insurance, part of taking the Firstmark Challenge, you call them, they go through your life, talk to you about your insurance needs, they go out there, shop their market of carriers, and they come back with just their honest recommendations. For some undivided viewers, they've been told, your insurance is great. You don't need us. I would keep that. That's the sign of an honest company. Or they'll say, hey, great, we can save you a bunch of money. We can get you better insurance. Mike and I saved $2,000 on our renewal, which, it's because they're out there doing this work and reevaluating your insurance every single year. And without them, we wouldn't have saved that $2,000. So I think that's great. FirstmarkInsurance.com, FirstmarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, there's been a lot of criticism of the flock camera systems lately, and there's been some criticism on both sides. You know, for Republicans, it's more of like a concern about a police state type situation. The liberals say they care about privacy. For some of them that show up that I've watched testify, I think they just don't want to be caught in the act of crimes. So that's part of it. Police chief in Chittek, Wisconsin, says he is awful suspicious of some of the people who are vehemently opposed to crime cameras.
I decided to get one to help my community, to help catch the bad guys, and I'm getting ridiculed for it. You guys want to call and cancel it? Go right ahead. I have no problem. But the next time grandma's missing or your car got stolen or you're missing money and I can't help you. Sorry. I'm just trying to be the guy. I have given 20 years to this city. My blood, sweat, and tears, missing family events, holidays. I've worked nights, weekends, and everything. And this is what I get for helping? Oof. I am not a rule breaker. I'm a law enforcement officer. I take that oath very freaking seriously. Oof. And to get slammed like I did tonight, good luck. That's all I'm going to say is good luck. I ought to do background checks on half the people that make comments.
Yeah, probably not a bad idea. I love the passion. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Appreciate every single one of you. If you'd like to subscribe to support our show, you can do that for just $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.